We're doing the Navi Yeshayahu. We're up to what's called the 28th chapter, the 10th Pasuk. The Navi describes how the north and the south, they were all sinning. The pride of Ephraim, the northern 10 tribes, was to be trampled. And the Navi was describing how in Judea as well, we have serious problems. People are drinking. People are disregarding the words of the prophets because even they, the prophets and the Kohanim, are drinking. So they are false prophets. And all their tables are filled with vile vomit because people are in pursuit of this lifestyle. The Navi says, who can I teach here? There's no one to talk to, only the children. The adults are all gone. And the Navi continues and says a pasuk, which is poetic, obviously, but we have multiple interpretations as to what the Navi was saying in this pasuk. Pasuk Yud. Ki tzav la tzav, tzav la tzav. A commandment to a commandment, a commandment to a commandment. Kav la kav, kav la kav. A straight line to a straight line, a straight line to a straight line. Ze'er sham, ze'er sham. A bit here, a bit there. What did he just say? So Rashi interprets it to mean, anytime the Navi quotes a commandment, they say, I have a commandment corresponding to that. My pagan god told me something else. Ki tzav latzav, tzav latzav. Commandment for commandment. Anytime the Navi tries to tell him, do tshuva, do different. He says, but the pagan ways tell me to do this way. Kav lakav. Whenever the Navi tries to show them, this is a straight line, this is the way to judge, this is the way to be honest. And they say, we have our own way of judging, we have our own way of drawing a line. So they're not willing to hear about working the way of Hashem or being honest with one another. And the Navi says, destruction's coming. And they answer, oh, it's just a bit of destruction here, a bit of destruction there. We're not so worried. That's how Rashi learns. The Mitzuda learns a different shad. The Mitzuda learns tzav la tzav, that they're so distant from the mitzvos of Hashem that he can't come and tell them, here's what you should do. He has to give them another commandment beyond the commandment of the Torah. He has to give them all these protective institutions, all these rabbinic siyagim, these rabbinic fences, because they're so accustomed to transgressing the basic mitzvot. So we find this in the time of the Second Temple. Ezra comes in and says, you guys are not allowed to do business on Shabbos. And they say, says who? Where does it say that in the Torah? So they want to do business on Shabbos. Ezra has to say, no touching money on Shabbos. Because otherwise they're not even understanding how you can't do business on Shabbos. Kav is the straight line. They would form straight lines by holding a string and a weight on the bottom. And that's how when they were building a building, they wanted to ensure they were building in a straight line. So the Navi describes it in poetic form. The Navi says they need another straight line to back their straight line because their Torah, so to speak, is untenable. They can't maintain anything in the Torah. They're so distant from it. I have to not only teach them the Torah, I have to teach them more fences, protective ways to ensure they keep the Torah. Ze'er sham, ze'er sham. Even a person who says, I'm ready to learn Torah. All you can do is teach them a drop here, a drop there. They're so distant from the Torah that you can't teach them everything all at once. And anything you do teach them, you have to add a lot of protective barriers. So the Mitzuda learns a very different shot from Rashi. Yes?
There seems to be a little bit extra repetition, though. Maybe just looking at Rashi's, it's like a commandment for a commandment, a commandment for a commandment. If it was just Stan that they learned commandments from their pagan gods or whatever, it would be a commandment for a commandment and not the double repetition. Is there, does the Malbim explain why?
Why the double lashon?
Yeah.
So the Malbim learns that he's coming to say, everything I taught him, I had to teach him a second time. And that's not enough, because I have to draw lines and teach him like little children, because they're so distant from the Torah. That's how the Malbim explains. The Targum has a different translation. The Targum says, I commanded them to keep my Torah, and what I commanded, they didn't want to do. And I sent them prophets who told them that if they do tshuva, I'll forgive them, and they weren't willing to listen to the prophets. Tzav la tzav, tzav la tzav, commandment after commandment, they're not willing to do it. They don't want to do my Torah. They refuse, and they think that they will maintain their pagan idol worship, and they don't want to come and do the service of the Beit HaMikdash. I am minuscule in their eyes, and the service of the temple is minuscule in their eyes. Ze'er sham, ze'er sham. They say, it seems so minuscule to work in the temple of Hashem, even though Hashem says, I am there. But in their eyes, that is small. So that's how he learns, tzav la tzav, tzav la tzav. I've commanded them, keep my Torah, and they're not willing to listen. So, okay. Pasuk Yud Aleph. Ki bilagei safa uvelashon acheret. Laag is when we speak in a language that's incomprehensible. So the Navi says, when I speak to them, it's as though I'm using incomprehensible language. I'm using a foreign tongue. Yedaber el ha'am hazeh. Anyone who tries to rebuke them, anyone who tries to educate them, is viewed as though he's talking a language they don't understand. Asher amar aleihem, because the prophet's been telling them, zot ha'menucha hanich ulayef. If you want to rest, then you have to give your workers a break too. You have to let tired people rest on Shabbos. Vizot amar ge'ah, and this is the way in which you will have a break. People say, I got to have my store open on Shabbos. If your worker's working on Shabbos, you're working on Shabbos. It's not only for your worker's sake, says the Navi. I'm coming for your sake too. Ve'lo avu shimoha, and they refused to listen. That was the argument now in Tel Aviv, why many rabbis came and said, even if you don't respect, unfortunately, the way of the Torah, you can't open stores on Shabbos because what you're doing is you're destroying society. Who's going to have to work? The worker in Tnuva is going to have to work delivering the goods. He doesn't want to work on Shabbos. You're not only forcing, you're not only allowing the storekeepers, you're forcing their workers who don't have a say. You're going against the weakest rung of society, the people who can't fight the system. When Shabbos says your stores have to be closed, so on a social level, leave the mitzvah. The rabbi said, of course we want you to keep Shabbos for the sake of the mitzvah. But even from a social perspective, you're destroying society if you're allowing people to open their stores on Shabbos. The Navi says, I tell them, you want to rest, let your workers rest. You'll be able to rest too. Ve'lo avu shimoa, and they refuse to listen. V'haya lahem devar Adonai. And the commandment of Hashem is in their eyes, tzav la tzav, tzav la tzav, tzav la tzav, kav la kav, kav la kav, ze'er sham, ze'er sham. So he requotes that wording. He says, Hashem's commandment in their eyes is tzav latzav. Now, the Rashi's interpretation is just as they behaved, that's the way Hashem's going to behave to them. Hashem says, okay, I'll let the nations come, and they will give you a commandment that corresponds to your pagan commandment. If you wouldn't listen to my commandment that contradicted the pagan ways, so I'll give you a so to speak, a punishment that the enemy will give you commandments that will contradict the pagan ways. If you don't accept my line of reasoning, my honesty, so then I'll give you a line of reasoning of the enemy, which will be far harsher. Ze'el Sham, Ze'el Sham. You keep saying, oh, so there'll be a little bit of destruction. Hashem says, no, there'll be a little bit of time before all of this comes. Leman yelecho v'chashelu acho v'nishbaru. And they will go this path, says Hashem, and it will cause them to stumble backwards and break. V'nokeshu v'nilkadu. They will stumble on traps and they will be caught. Lachen shimu devar Adonai anshei latzon. So the Navi says, listen, you men who mock. Latzon. Letz is he who mocks. Now it's very difficult to talk to someone who mocks. You can talk to someone so long as the conversation remains on a serious level. The second there is mockery, the second someone's putting down what you're saying, it's very hard to get through to him. It's hard to accomplish anything. That's why Esav was irreparable. You couldn't repair him. Because anything you try to tell him that was serious, he would mock. Lachen shimu dvar Hashem anshei latzon. Moshelei ha'am hazeh, you who rule this people, asher birushalayim, who are in Jerusalem. Now the word latzon has an alternate meaning. The word latzon could also come from the word militza. When we say an allegory, we have the mashal, the meaning of the allegory, and the militza, the simple words that are said. So militza is also from the term latzon, and that's one interpretation over here. Hashem says, listen here, the leaders. Ki amartem, you keep declaring, as you mock my words, you say, karatnu berit et mavet, we made a pact with death. Don't worry, you keep saying we're going to die. Don't worry, we've covered that. We made a deal with death. It's not coming our way. Ve'im she'ol asinu chose. We have a contract with perdition. Don't worry, we signed a contract with the grave. We're not going there. And that's how they're mocking him. The Navi says, you're going to die. And they say, don't worry, we covered that. We're taken care of. Shot shotev ki yavo lo yevoenu. What they say is, even if the whip is coming by and it's beating people, it won't hit us. Ki samnu chazav machseinu uvasheker nistarnu. Because we have coverage. We can take coverage in a lie. If Hashem sends someone to beat us, we'll tell him, God didn't send you, hey, go back home. You're not supposed to beat us, you're supposed to beat someone else. So they were cracking jokes at the Navi's rebuke. The Navi's telling them there's going to be destruction, and they're saying, we're not worried. It's like people say, I'm not worried about going to Gehenna. All my friends are going to be there. So it sounds funny, but it's a way that people will mock something that should really cause them to think twice. Uvasheker nistanu. People say, I can take coverage in a lie. If Hashem will take me to task, I've got all kinds of answers. So it seems funny, but it's true. Till today, people have all kinds of funny excuses they tell themselves. I'll be able to get out of it. I have a good answer. Lachin. Ko amar Adonai Elohim. Being that there are people who mock the prophet and his prophecies, the Navi says, so says Hashem, hineni yisad b'tzion ahavin. Hashem says, I'm going to establish in Zion a stone. The idea was there was supposed to be a stone. Hashem says, I lay a stone as the foundation of Zion. I gave you kingship. I gave you rulers who were supposed to be that rock, that representation of consistency, of honesty, of trustworthiness. And I will reestablish that. Even Bohan, that was a rock which in ancient times, if you wanted to show you were strong, they had a rock that was called Even Bohan, the rock of the test. It was this big rock, and if you were really powerful, you could move it. So that was, Hashem says, I will establish such a rock, so to speak, in Jerusalem. Pinat yikrat musad, musad, hama'amin lo yachish. Hashem says, I'm going to lay this foundation, I'm going to reestablish the throne with the great king Chizkiyahu, and if you really believe what the prophet is saying, so don't worry, it won't happen so soon, but it is going to happen. And the Navi gives us an important formula. Our sages quote this pasuk often. This idea, Hamamin lo yachish. If you believe in Hashem, you don't have to see it happen right away. Hashem's telling you, I will establish. You will see that I will reestablish justice in Jerusalem. I'll get to you in a second, Amir. V'samti mishpat lekav. I will reestablish justice. I will reestablish honesty and straightness. Utzdaka limishkalet. Righteousness will again have a weight. V'ya'avarad machseh chazav. V'seter mayim gishtofu. V'ya'ot is to sweep, to clean up. In modern Hebrew, the word ya'eh is a dustpan. You sweep the dirt into a ya'eh. The word ya'ah in ancient Hebrew is a verb. It's to clean up, to sweep up. The ya'ah varad and the hail will sweep away the machseh chazav, the coverage of lies. Hashem says, I'm going to bring down a hail, a storm, that will clean away the coverage that people take in their lies. The seter and the hiding places that people have established for themselves in all kinds of lies. Maim yishtofu, the waters will wash away. And the Navi is referring to the great destruction that's going to come at the hands of Sancheiriv. Hashem says, I will reestablish justice. There's going to be a righteous king, Chizkiyahu, who will establish justice. I will bring down a torrent, that's the powerful kingdom of Sancheiriv, that swept away every other kingdom. Sancheiriv took down kingdom after kingdom until he swept all of Israel down to Jerusalem. And no convincing would work. He didn't care for anything. He wouldn't buy into any lies. Even people who tried to make a pact with him, if they didn't live up to their word completely, he'd wipe the floor with them. So Hashem says, I'm going to bring this hailstorm that'll wipe away all the lies. V'chupal b'ritechem et mavit. I'll clean away the pact you say you have with death. Why? Because Sancheiriv will bring with him a lot of death. V'chazutchem et she'olot akum, the pact you think you made with the grave, it's not going to last. Shot shotev ki ya'avor, and when that whip comes sweeping by, v'yitem lo limirmas, you're going to find that he tramples you too. The people said, if the whip comes into town, I'm going to take coverage in my lies. Hashem says, what are you thinking? You're going to tell the enemy, I'm on your side. I can make deals with you. It's not going to work. That's what happened in the days of Sancheiriv. 150,000 Jews said, we're going to make a pact with Sancheiriv. We're going to switch sides. There were more Jews who were willing to give Jerusalem than there were Jews who were faithful to Jerusalem. When Chizkiyahu, the king, said, let's hold on. God is on our side. Most of the people did not stay with him. There was a man named Rav Shakeh. He was a noble. He was from the house of David. And he led a rebellion against Chizkiyahu. And he promised Sancheiriv, tomorrow morning, I'm bringing you the majority of the Jews with me, and we will give over the city to you. And Sancheiriv agreed. And then when Rav Shakeh went out, Hashem made a miracle, and the door slammed shut behind him, and they couldn't reopen them. So he comes before Sancheiriv, and Sancheiriv says, where are your thousands of men? And he says, sir, there's been a mistake. The doors were locked behind me. He tries to give an excuse. Sancheiriv has him tied to horses, and they drag him across the thorns of the desert. They drag his body to pieces. So, people thought, I could make a pact with enemies. My lies are going to work. I'm going to tell the enemy, whatever enemy comes, I'll tell him, I'm with you, man. No problem. You think I'm a Jew? I'm just like you. Well, people said that all along. That's what happened before the Holocaust. So many people said, well, no one's going to hate us. We're just like them. Ah, well, you know what they say about the last train to Auschwitz, right? So it didn't work. And Hashem warns them in this prophecy. He says, it's not going to work. People think they're going to hide. It's not going to work. Saying, I'm going to hide under my lies. I'll tell the enemy I'm just like them. Here, that'll cover me. Hashem says, no. I will annul that pact with death. You think you've avoided death. And this is a recurring theme in Jewish history. After the Holocaust, many people went into hiding and said, I'm not going to tell anyone I'm Jewish. I can take on a non-Jewish name, get to marry non-Jews, and I'm good. Nothing will happen to me. it's understandable. It's understandable for sure after destruction. Here it wasn't after destruction. It's before destruction. It's because they wanted to lead their wanton life. They wanted to say, hey, I'm going to do what I want. So the Navi says it's not going to work. This can also be understood in gentler terms, even though I don't think that's what the Navi's saying, but there is this message as well, that people were faced with an impossible dilemma, because so long as the Navi keeps making promises, you can deny the truth of what he's saying. But when you have an open miracle, like the miracle that happened with Sanherith, where the whole city is in siege, you have the most powerful kingdom on the planet at that time that's taken down every other planet surrounding the city. And Sanherith tells him, I've got over 250,000 men here. I'll give you as many horses as you want. You can't stand up to my army. And then in one night, there's a plague and people just drop dead like flies and the city of Jerusalem is saved. So the Navi told them beforehand it would happen. They wake up in the morning and they see it's happened. Now what are you going to say? Meaning this idea, if we wanted to understand it in gentler terms, that Hashem says, I'm going to sweep down and the water will wash away your lies, if not for the fact that the commentaries learned that it was literal, we could also understand it philosophically. Amir was waiting first. Yes?
Just going back a little bit to the idea of son mockery or always being ironical. I know that here we're speaking about a very extreme situation where the Navi is actually, you know, warning about destruction, about evil ways. But I'm trying to think in our terms in a more mundane and day-to-day basis when we're talking about mockery or making fun of things, especially things related to Kedusha and to Torah. But so how should one approach it, even in talking from an observant perspective, one who fears Hashem and he respects the Torah, but you know, so many times we have jokes to ease up the environment. I was asking because yesterday you were talking about how bad the situation with the gear laws are, and some of us couldn't stop laughing because it's almost so absurd that your natural reaction is to not even, you know, relate seriously with this. But I'm talking like in a more moderate approach, if making fun or using jokes from events that were taken out from Tanakh, from Talmud, or from Torah, is it really bad or something? It depends. Depends who you are with. Depends on the context. Should you avoid it all? Especially events and you know, important people that appear in the Torah, sometimes you have jokes that just ease up the mood. And you sure don't believe in the jokes, but they're fun, you know, they're, I don't know. I think it's a very subjective, also depends on the context of each one, so I'd like to hear what's the... Is that a joke?
I'll be happy if we can address that separately, okay?
Okay.
Let's finish the Navi and then...
Okay.
Yes?
The two things want to slip my mind. So the idea that we're just like them, it sounds, it's a tragedy, but it often works, assimilation. I mean, you know, when once in a while, you know, there's a Hitler machshimo where it doesn't work, although even then, you know, Goring would say, I'll decide who's a Jew if someone had a Jewish grandparent or this and that. There were people. But look what we faced throughout history. It wasn't only pogroms and persecution. There was a ton of assimilation, usually among people that aren't that learned in the Torah, which, thank God, people come here, so many people are trying to make it so it doesn't get that. So usually, if they themselves can't become just like them, certainly their children and grandchildren do, and it's usually, more often than not, it is successful, and it's troubling, but, you know, because here he's like saying, that won't work. Yeah, it won't work this time, but, you know, with sense, but often it doesn't, it has. And then the other thing...
I would like to mention... There was once a king who gave heavy, heavy taxes. And the more wealthy people were, the more they had to pay taxes. One person decided he's going to outsmart the king. And what he did was, when his children came of age, instead of giving them an inheritance, He sent each child to a different village, and he said, manage, I don't want you to have to pay taxes. And so then each child became poor, and their grandchildren became poor, and he was successful. None of his children paid taxes. But what do we say about such a person? We say, so you didn't pay taxes, but you didn't give him your wealth. I'm saying that's
terrible.
But that's what you can say, yes. People can destroy their lives. If a person commits suicide, then they also won't suffer. Saying, it's a spiritual suicide.
But the person who's committing it doesn't know enough to see it that way. Otherwise, they wouldn't do it.
I'm not sure.
You think? That's the other thing when you said that if you see open miracles, but we know that was the other, that look what the people saw in Mitzrayim, and they say a huge percentage didn't leave. Look at the Mitzrayim.
That has to be discussed separately, yeah. But... that has to be discussed separately.
Okay.
Just going back to the question of can we really say that the generation that leaves doesn't know better? I think that we're a little bit too easy on people, meaning we're too forgiving of laziness. We discussed it last night. It doesn't work, that cop-out, when a person says, I didn't know. Well, I didn't take the time to know. Does a person take an hour, a week, an hour, a month, an hour, a year?
That's a huge discussion. But if someone has the right rebbe and the right parents and they leave, yes, it can happen. You've seen it probably. You grew up in that world. But more often than not, the vast majority haven't a clue. Now, you could
the
say
next generation haven't a clue.
Yeah.
The next generation. But
yeah.
The generation that leaves,
yeah.
Usually it's not that way.
I don't know enough to have an opinion. I just see that there's a huge amount of assimilation, and it often works. It's sad. But
I'm saying, but again, we discern, like the Rambam writes about the Karaites, the Rambam writes. Our whole issue is with the generation that leaves. The next generation we have no issue with. They grew up, they didn't know any better. They thought this is Judaism.
The ones that left, how much did they try to not send them to the cantonists, I think, and how much did they? There's a responsibility to the community always.
You can't absolve people of their responsibility to know that.
My point wasn't absolving. My point was that it works. You're right.
Suicide also works.
Right, but okay.
I'm saying you're saying people can commit spiritual suicide and, right. Yeah, okay. What can I say?
Okay.
But I don't think that's called it works.
I agree with you totally, but it's a very subjective viewpoint. Most people would say, commit suicide or whatever, or whoever. I thought they'd have to consent. Anyway, I hope.